From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the U.S. Secretary of State holds overseas talks on Ukraine.
The purpose of the talks here in London was really on what happens next.
The death of a well-known Chinese activist, a drive to end the recruitment of child soldiers, and seeking the definition of happiness. It's all ahead. I'm Susan Yawkey. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in London today, where he held talks on the crisis in Ukraine. U.S. officials say they are very concerned by Russian troop movements along the border with Ukraine, which they say create an atmosphere of instability ahead of Sunday's referendum on the fate of Crimea. VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns is traveling with the Secretary of State.
U.S. officials on this trip are pretty mindful that it's far too late to stop this referendum in Crimea. It's going to go ahead on Sunday. Crimeans are likely to vote to join the Russian Federation. The United States and the European Union will then Monday impose some sanctions against Russia for allowing Crimea to go ahead with this referendum. The purpose of the talks here in London was really on what happens next. Just because Crimea votes to join the Russian Federation does not mean that they will join the Russian Federation. And so the window between that vote and the accession could be more than a week, say, if they do it through the Duma and there are three votes there and then it goes to the Russian Federation Council and then it would go to President Putin for his signature. Or President Putin could decide to annex or agree to Crimea's request to join the Russian Federation in some sort of extraordinary executive manner and be done with it Monday morning. That would leave no window for negotiations over how to have a middle ground, perhaps a more autonomous Crimea that could then be folded into some sort of compromise government in Kiev.
You mentioned sanctions. What are these sanctions?
The sanctions that U.S. and European Union officials will impose on Monday are targeted against individuals in Russia who have been directly involved in what, in the opinion of the U.S. and the European Union, have been the Russian military presence in Crimea ahead of this referendum. But there are many different layers of sanctions that U.S. and European Union officials are prepared to impose if there's no progress on demilitarizing the situation following the referendum, if there's no pullback, if there's no greater diplomatic urgency on the part of Moscow. So while this will be the first set of sanctions, the understanding is that it can't be everything at up front because that leaves no room for negotiation.
Well, what if this goes through? What if Russia does get Crimea? Is there any indication how far the United States and others are willing to go? Is there any chance that this might turn into a military confrontation?
I can't see the Europeans or the United States really confronting Russia militarily over Crimea. The appetite's not there.
VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns speaking with us from London. Ukraine's interim prime minister has appealed to the UN Security Council for its support to help stop Russia from annexing Ukraine's Crimean region in the controversial referendum planned for Sunday. VOA's Margaret Bashir has details from UN headquarters in New York.
Interim Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk told the UN's most powerful organ that his country is facing the military aggression of one of the council's permanent members, Russia.
This aggression has no reasons and no grounds. This is absolutely and entirely unacceptable in the 21st century. To resolve any kind of conflict with tanks artillery, and boots on the ground.
He said despite Russia's violation of a number of treaties, Ukraine still believes there is a chance to resolve the dispute peacefully and avoid the secession and annexation of Crimea this Sunday. Speaking in Russian, he addressed Moscow's ambassador, asking him if Russia wants war. He is heard here through an interpreter.
We are looking for an answer to the question whether the Russians want war. And I'm sure, as the Prime Minister of Ukraine, which for decades had warm and friendly relations with Russia, I'm convinced that Russians do not want war.
Russia's UN Ambassador Vitaly Churkin replied to Mr. Yatsenyuk during his remarks. He is also heard through an interpreter.
Russia does not want war, and nor do the Russians. And I'm convinced that Ukrainians don't want this either. Furthermore, and this is something which I want to especially underscore, we do not see any premises to view and interpret the situation in such terms. We don't want any further exacerbation of the situation.
Despite those words, several ambassadors accused Russia of building up its military presence in and around Ukraine. They also reiterated their demands that Moscow pull back its troops to their barracks, allow in international human rights monitors, and suspend the referendum, which they say is illegal under Ukraine's constitution. Russia's international isolation was evident, with even its closest ally, China, taking a firm stance in support of Ukraine's sovereignty and asserting its policy of non-interference in another state's domestic affairs. Earlier Thursday, the U.S. delegation circulated a draft resolution reaffirming the principles of Ukraine's territorial integrity, sovereignty, and independence, and which states that Sunday's referendum is illegal and urges nations not to recognize the results. The draft text does not name Russia as an aggressor nor explicitly demand it pull its troops back from Crimea. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said her Russian counterpart's remarks seem to be about validating the referendum and annexation of Crimea.
So that, of course, causes us grave alarm, which is one of the reasons that we have circulated this resolution in the hopes of finding a vehicle for showing the extent of Russia's isolation as it pursues a non-peaceful path.
Diplomats said they expect a Russian veto, but if Moscow's close ally, China, abstains, it would demonstrate Russia's extensive international isolation. Several diplomats said they favored holding a vote by Saturday. Prime Minister Yatsenyuk also met with UN Chief Ban Ki-moon Thursday. Mr. Ban has repeatedly called on all parties to de-escalate the situation and find a solution through political dialogue. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
In this report from Washington, VOA senior correspondent Andre Dineshna speaks about the situation in Crimea with former U.S. Ambassador Jack Matlock, a longtime expert on Russia.
Since the late 18th century, Crimea was part of Russia. The last U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union, Jack Matlock, says the peninsula played an important role in Russian history, especially in the military arena.
The English-speaking people maybe don't realize that the charge of the Light Brigade, that famous charge, happened during the Crimean War when the British were attacking Crimea. Leo Tolstoy, the great novelist, wrote some of his early stories about that. He was a artillery officer on the Russian side. The naval base at Sevastopol has been the headquarters of the Russian Black Sea Fleet ever since it was established there in the late 18th century.
During the Russian Civil War, Crimea became a base for the White Army of anti-Bolshevik forces. In 1954, then-Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev gave the peninsula to Ukraine, at that time a Soviet republic. But now Crimea is under the control of Russian armed forces who moved into the peninsula last month. Russian officials say the move was to protect ethnic Russians living there. They represent the majority of Crimea's population. But Western officials say there is no evidence that Russians need protection. Matlock says by taking military control over Crimea, Russia has violated Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. The former U.S. ambassador disagrees with those who say Russian President Vladimir Putin acted the way he did in Crimea because he felt President Barack Obama was weak.
He's doing this in part, and I think very damaging to his own cause, because he sees, I think unfairly, that it has been the policy of the United States in particular and the West in general to encircle Russia militarily, and he's not going to accept that. No Russian leader would.
Matlock says those who say Mr. Obama is weak are sending the wrong signals.
Many that are crying that we are looking weak are precisely those that overplayed our hand, that got us involved in situations, that tragically lost nearly 5,000 American lives in Iraq. It is absolutely absurd to start implying that by beating his chest a little more, he could subdue a Russia which in Russia's eyes is only defending their interests. Very unwisely, against international law, against previous agreements, but they can say exactly the same thing about some of the things we were doing just a few years ago.
Lawmakers in Crimea have scheduled a referendum March 16th on whether to join Russia or stay within Ukraine. Matlock says in the event voters decide to join Russia, any move to rearrange borders would violate the 1975 Helsinki Final Act. It says, among other things, that if recognized borders are changed, it must be by mutual agreement of all parties involved, in this case, Russia and Ukraine.
I would hope that the government would simply say, we have a political obligation under the Helsinki Final Act. The Soviet Union signed it, and as a successor state, we also have those obligations. And therefore, we are not going to accept Crimea until the Ukrainian government, which is the de jure sovereign, agrees to it.
Matlock says that would be a brilliant political move by President Putin, and it would diffuse tensions in a volatile region. As for Sunday's referendum, the United States, its European allies, and the Ukrainian government say it violates the Ukrainian constitution and is illegal. Andre Dineshner, VOA News, Washington.
Well-known Chinese activist Xiao Shunli died today at a hospital in Beijing. The 52-year-old dissident had campaigned for human rights and had been detained in September as she was preparing to travel to Geneva to participate in a human rights training program. Last summer, she took part in a sit-in in front of the Chinese Foreign Ministry to urge the public to participate in a national human rights report. Amnesty International called her death reprehensible and said she was repeatedly detained, denied treatment. Tung Bao was Chow's lawyer in 2010. He is now visiting scholar at the Chinese University of Hong Kong and tells VOA's Sarah Williams about his reaction to her death.
No government in the world is telling us, I have the right to recruit children and to send them fight. It's not your business. No one is telling us this. Out of the eight that are listed, six already signed an action plan with the United Nations, and the two remaining are in a process of finalizing their action plan.
We'll now have that report by Sarah Williams in her interview. We are trying to bring you that report right now that Sarah Williams conducted.
Not only girls and boys. That's what happened to them in the...
Apparently, we do not have that report at this time. We'll try to bring it to you a little later. The United Nations is launching a campaign to end the recruitment and use of child soldiers by 2016. It says eight governments on a Security Council list of child recruiters have agreed to sign an action plan to end these violations and to prevent them from occurring in the future. The UN Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict, Leila Zerghoui, is spearheading the campaign jointly with the UN Children's Fund. She says the outlook is promising because nations are unanimous that using children to fight in a war is unacceptable and must end.
Not only girls and boys. No government in the world is telling us, I have the right to recruit children and to send them fight. It's not your business. No one is telling us this. Out of the eight that are listed, six already signed an action plan with the United Nations, and the two remaining are in a process of finalizing their action plan.
In the presentation of her annual report to the UN Human Rights Council, Zerghoui spoke about the disproportionate and intolerable impact that conflicts around the world have on children. She spent 4 years serving in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. She said she was deeply affected by the terrible stories boys and girls told her about how they had been abducted, recruited, indoctrinated, and used as sex slaves.
Not only girls, girls and boys. That's what happened to them in the bush. They serve as cook, they serve as porters, they serve as sex slaves, and they are also human shields. That's the reality. You even cannot reintegrate them in their community when they return because you cut the link with the community and the family. It's terrible what happened to these children. And that's why we have all to be united and to work and to make sure that these children will not, will never, ever be recruited. And those who are doing this have to pay a price.
Globally, the number of children recruited as soldiers is estimated between 250,000 and 300,000. The UN Action Plan obliges governments to ban their military from drafting and using child soldiers. It promises to release children from service and to reintegrate them into civilian life. It also calls upon states to criminalize this practice and ensure that no child under 18 is drafted.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
U.S. President Barack Obama says he has directed the nation's Homeland Security Department to find ways to enforce immigration laws more humanely. The White House says President Obama made the announcement in a meeting with members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Latino groups have criticized Mr. Obama for deportation practices as moves toward a comprehensive overhaul of the nation's immigration system remain stalled in Congress. Republican lawmakers in the House of Representatives are at the center of the holdup, with party leaders saying legislation is unlikely to move forward before the November congressional elections. The Senate passed its version of the reform bill last June. Many immigration advocates have expressed frustration with President Obama's handling of their millions of immigrants living in the country illegally. The president has taken steps to ease deportations of children brought to the U.S. illegally by their parents, but immigrant rights groups have urged him to do more. March 20th is the International Day of Happiness. In the Kingdom of Bhutan, the measure of the quality of life is expressed as the GNH, the Gross National Happiness. In 2012, the tiny Himalayan nation persuaded the UN General Assembly to establish the International Day of Happiness. It is a formal opportunity to consider what makes us happy. As we hear from VOA's Faith Lapidus, the emotion is so important to our well-being that America's founding fathers considered the pursuit of it a God-given right.
What is happiness? We know it when we feel it, but there's no simple way to define it, says Joseph Panetta, spokesman for Live Happy magazine. However, he adds, there are certain components to happiness.
Those things include positive relationships, a positive outlook. They include engagement, being engaged in your community and the things that go on around you. And meaning. Meaning is probably one of the most important things. When someone feels that what they're doing has a real meaning behind it that is greater than themselves, they derive a much more positive feeling from doing it.
Being happy, he says, is essential for our health.
We know from a scientific perspective that human beings are actually hardwired to perform their best when happy. People with positive and optimistic mindsets earn higher incomes, they set and achieve more aggressive goals, they have less stress, they're more energetic, and they also recover from illness faster, and interestingly, they live longer.
Filmmaker Adam Schell agrees. He considers himself a happy person.
I've always, had a high baseline for happiness, and my default goes back to happy and content. I like to laugh a lot. And for me, that's one of my priorities in life.
Schell has traveled across America searching for genuinely happy people for his documentary, Pursuing Happiness.
What we did is we just reached out to everybody we knew along that route and said, hey, who's the happiest person you know? And we got amazing responses.
They found more than 360 happy people.
We've interviewed people in their late 90s, We actually have a woman who's 104. We've also interviewed people who are two, barely able to talk, but they have a perspective on happiness and everything in between.
Shell says those people didn't let life's challenges take away their happiness.
There's this one gentleman who actually lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. He lost both of his hands from his elbow down in an electrical accident almost 25 years ago. Then he lost his wife to cancer and had to raise his daughter on his own. And this is a guy who it seemed like everything that could go wrong in his life was going wrong. And the entire time he was going through all of this, he maintained such high standards of, you know, attitude and emotion, and he was always happy. He was always cracking jokes and seeing the lighter side of life.
People, he says, are not happy because they're successful. They succeed because they're happy.
You know, life is difficult in any way you slice it, no matter where you live, how you live, and I think it's all about attitude. It's how you look at the world. And when something bad happens, yeah, you have to go through that. Negative emotions and the fear and the loss and the pain. And none of the people that we've interviewed have denied those emotions. But it's how you turn that around. It's saying, okay, I went through that. That happened. Now I want to get back to me. Now I want to get back to the way I want to be in life.
Shell will show segments from his documentary in New York on March 20th, the International Day of Happiness, to encourage people to focus on what makes them happy. That's also the goal behind the Acts of Happiness campaign by Live Happy magazine, says Joseph Panetta.
The Acts of Happiness campaign will actually bring walls of happiness to major metropolitan cities all across the country. And these walls of happiness are meant for people to go there and write on them their acts of happiness, what they do to share and spread happiness in the world. Happiness grows when you share it and when you spread it. If they're not in a city where there is a wall located, they can go to the website actsofhappiness.org, and there's a virtual wall there, and they can share and celebrate their acts of happiness on the virtual wall.
After all, he says, happiness is contagious, and you can celebrate it every day of the year. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. There's a whole bunch of things to do there while you're there. You get those news stories or features. Or one thing that's a lot of fun is you can go to the podcast tab, which is right at the top of the page on the right-hand side, and pull down the podcast that says International Edition, and you can hear the program again. And you can listen to any program that way, matter of fact. So that's a lot of fun. Just wanted to thank you for tuning in. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter, where advocates and opponents debate a critical issue of the week. From Afghanistan to Zimbabwe, from the White House to Capitol Hill, we bring you the story behind the headlines. If you have a comment on one of our programs or ideas for topics, please write to us at Encounter, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. That's Encounter, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or if you have access to the Internet, send us an email to encounter at voanews.com. Once again, encounter at voanews.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated one quarter of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. Two-thirds of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story. by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.